Now, coming up next, a debate between the candidates for Marion County Prosecutor, Carl Brizzi, Melina Kennedy. We'll talk about five issues in particular: experience, guns, violent crime, the campaign, criminal justice, resources, and neighborhood safety. Now, the debate is being sponsored by the Rotary Club of Indianapolis at the historic Murrah Shrine in the Arabian Room. And now we'll go right to the debate with Elaine Beadle. She is president of the Rotary Club of Indianapolis.
The Rotary Club of Indianapolis is pleased to host the Marion County Prosecutor Candidate Debate and welcome the participants Melina Kennedy and Carl Brizzi. We are also pleased to have Dennis Ryerson as our moderator. Dennis is the Vice President and Editor of the Indianapolis Star. Dennis comes to us today with great experience in moderating debates. While he was editor of the Des Moines Register, he moderated three nationally televised presidential debates. So please help me in welcoming our debate moderator, Dennis Ryerson.
Thanks, Elaine. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm really pleased to be with you this afternoon for this very important debate between two articulate and personable candidates for, I think, one of the most important positions in Marion County. I also want to welcome our listening audience on WFYI Radio to this Rotary Club of Indianapolis debate. As an editor, I don't really like to have crime stories on page one of my newspaper. It doesn't really speak well of the community that I live in. But we've had too many of those stories this year. The murder rate has gone up, and even in so-called safe neighborhoods, crime is on the minds of everybody. In my neighborhood, neighbors tell me, don't leave your garage door open when you're working in the backyard. Somebody could come in and steal something from the garage, lawn furniture, whatever. So just be careful. Crime does affect all of us. So again, I think that underscores the importance of this position and the importance of today's debate. Now, I'm not going to give you a long biography of each candidate, incumbent Carl Brizzi and former Deputy Mayor Melina Kennedy. This audience is well aware of each of the candidates, I'm sure. And I've had the pleasure to get to know both of them even before this campaign began. And if it's okay with all of you, I'm going to dispense with the formal courtesy titles and address them as the people I know, Melina and Carl. A couple of comments about the ground rules of this debate. Each of the candidates will open with a five-minute statement. I'll then ask five questions with the candidates alternating their two-minute answers. The first candidate to answer a question then will be allowed 1 minute for a rebuttal. At the end of the question period, each candidate will have 2.5 minutes for a closing statement. By the way, I know we have strong partisans for each candidate present, and please hold any applause or outburst until the end of the debate. We just don't have time for an interruption. We've selected five topics for today's debate: resources, guns and violent crime, the campaign, public safety, and experience. So we'll begin with the opening statements, which were determined by the order of which were determined by a coin toss. Carl won the toss, and Carl begins first with your five-minute opening statement. Carl?
Dennis, thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. And thank you for being here and taking time out of your busy days to be informed about the issues that I believe are critical to this race. 4 years ago, I was elected as your prosecutor with a philosophy that criminals have a choice and victims don't. And by now, you all know that that's more than just some campaign slogan. That's a pledge. That's a pledge to do everything I can do to protect you and your families from violent criminals. And you know the ones I'm talking about. We're talking about the worst of the worst, the drug dealers, the habitual criminals, the gang members, those that would prey upon seniors and children. And we have made a great deal of progress. Many of the prosecutors that are in the room here today work hard every single day to put those people behind bars. We're winning the war on methamphetamine. We have a 95% conviction rate in the prosecutor's office for those who make, sell, and use methamphetamine. Because of stepped-up enforcement, aggressive prosecution, treatment programs, we've seen almost a 25% decrease in the number of meth labs seized. Child support, I was raised by a single mom. This is an essential tool to help children have the resources they need so they don't get caught up in a life of crime. We've opened up satellite offices throughout Marion County to make it easier for single moms to access child support so they don't have to go downtown, find a parking space, fight the crowds in the city-county building to access the critical services that they need. We've collected over $86 million in child support, which represents over a 16% increase in child support collections over the last 4 years. We've conducted internet sting operations, most recently last week, catching a law enforcement officer preying upon someone he believed was a 13-year-old girl, and a month before that, a high school teacher in the same sting operation. But I'm running for re-election because there's still more work to be done. You've heard me talk about an insidious new threat that we're facing as a county. You know that I was the former gang prosecutor under Scott Newman, that I led the Metro Gang Task Force against gangbangers from Chicago, vice lords, gangster disciples. The gangs we are facing now are from El Salvador. They matriculate through California to Indianapolis. I'm talking about gangs like MS-13, Mara Savatruca, who do their work with machetes, much more violent than the street gangs that we used to deal with, threatening law enforcement officials, literally gouging out their eyes to send a message that we, the gang members, know that you're watching us. We have a plan to attack gang violence. We have the Brizzy Brief 2006 that talks about how we went last year before the General Assembly and literally got prison time doubled for those gang members that are committing felonies in furtherance of a criminal gang enterprise. We're cross-training our community prosecutors right now to literally attack these gangs geographically in a partnership with the U.S. Attorney's Office. And we're translating our new preventive program about educating kids about gun violence into Spanish, and that's currently happening as we speak, so that we can literally reach these children at a time in their lives when it makes the most sense before they get caught up in the juvenile justice system. You've seen me talk about my mentoring programs, programs that are designed to have a one-on-one relationship with an at-risk child so that we reach them before they make decisions that can forever affect their lives. I gave a speech last year. It was literally the hardest speech I've ever had to give because it was to my daughter's eighth grade commencement class at Northview. And she resisted. You can imagine, right? She's 14. She resisted for the longest time me giving the speech because she didn't want her dad to embarrass her. But what I said to these 14-year-olds and their parents was that the choices that you make in high school, 14, 15 years old, can forever affect your success, no matter how you define success. You can define it money, relationships, jobs, whatever it is. The decisions that you make right now can forever impact that. And these programs that we have in the prosecutor's office, these preventative programs, these interventive programs, very proactive, designed to make a difference. And over time, with programs like these, the mentoring, truancy programs, making sure that underage children don't start smoking, those types of programs coupled with aggressive prosecution, targeting the gang members, targeting the habitual criminals, targeting the pedophiles who use the internet to prey upon our children, we can make a difference. And you have my commitment, and this audience knows me well, that I wake up every single day swinging, making sure that we're doing everything we can do to make Marion County as safe as it can be. Thank you for being here, and I appreciate your attention.
Thank you, Carl. Melina, your opening statement.
Thank you. I also appreciate the opportunity to be here today and appreciate everyone being here. I want to thank the Rotary Club not only for hosting this lunch, but for everything that you do in our entire community. Really appreciate that. And I certainly want to just quickly also acknowledge my husband, Bob Kennedy, who's here today, and I appreciate his support. Over the last 4 years, I think we all know, and Carl Brizzy just acknowledged, we have witnessed a dramatic rise in crime. We see it every night when we go to bed on the news. We see it in the morning when we read the paper. And these are stories that make us cringe as parents, as residents, as community members. And the bottom line is, my concern is this. I'm concerned that we are at risk of losing this war on crime. And we're not losing the war in the streets. What the numbers tell us is that arrests are up and law enforcement's doing their job. What I'm concerned about is that we're at risk of losing this war in the courtroom, where conviction rates are steadily down and significantly down in key areas. Recently, we've seen these key reductions in conviction rate, overall conviction rate reduction, which means material impact in our crime rate, because the numbers aren't just numbers, they represent people. When we have an 8% less conviction rate for felonies, we see those numbers translate into criminals, real criminals back in your neighborhoods, and real victims who haven't been served justice. As deputy mayor, I've been in the neighborhoods, and I've seen firsthand how crime impacts our families. I can remember talking to a woman on the east side who was literally in tears because she couldn't walk 3 blocks from where she worked back to her own home. And I remember talking to her being heartsick for her, but I can tell you I was also really angry because she needed that job, and she needs a safe neighborhood, and she needs a prosecutor who will fight for her. It is time for a change. It's time for new leadership. And it's time we had a plan that goes after this rise in crime and wins the battle in the courtroom. I have a plan that will attack this rise in crime by going after that unholy trinity that's killing our neighborhoods, gangs, guns, and drugs, aggressively. And by keeping our children safe from sexual predators. And by making sure that we are targeting key areas like domestic violence before a fist becomes a gun. I believe this election is about change. I believe this election is about that woman on the east side and the thousands like her who want safe neighborhoods. And I believe we can do better. Thank you.
Thank you, Melina. Now let's begin the questioning. The first question deals with the issue of resources. And the question is this. Dealing with crime isn't just a matter for the prosecutor's office. Please comment as specifically as you can about what is needed from city, county government to combat crime. And Melina, you'll go first.
There is no question that this fight in the rise in crime in our community will take a collaborative effort. And I'm very proud that as deputy mayor, I was part of significant efforts, leading efforts, to make a difference in bringing new resources. Supporting Mayor Peterson in consolidation of law enforcement, a tough decision. A tough decision that requires leadership. And frankly, leaders who sat on the bench that didn't step up to either support or object to that, I think, failed in the responsibility as leaders. Secondly, increasing the county option income tax, the COIT tax, that wasn't an easy decision. And I'm proud that I helped advise Mayor Peterson to step up and support that for new resources for the criminal justice system. But third, working collaboratively across party lines with other leaders and other agencies in city government, but also outside of city government. And my experience in the past working with domestic violence issues is exactly what we need to forge relationships to attack these kinds of evils like domestic violence. Working with law schools for protective pro bono orders, working with the community so that we can have partnerships with, for example, the School of Social Work, and having social work student interns based out of the prosecutor's office to help victims get through a crime. Programs that have been in place before that I'd like to return to this office. And the bottom line is this. We have to work more collaboratively across party lines, across agency lines. And I'm proud of the record that I have and going forward to make sure that our community is safe.
Okay, thank you, Carl.
Thank you, Dennis. We must never forget as a community that the people responsible for the increase in crime are, in fact, the criminals. We continue to water down personal accountability and personal responsibility. Now, with that said, obviously, we all have a role in combating crime. The prosecutor's office, the mayor's office, IPD, the sheriff, you all, faith-based institutions, and the prosecutor's office has worked very aggressively to partner with faith-based institutions for mentoring programs. When Mayor Peterson thought that he had to lay off police officers because the consolidation didn't go through the first time, I was the person who stepped up and said, let's form the Plan B Commission, figure out ways, let's co-chair this committee together, figure out ways to not lay these officers off. The jail overcrowding situation, you've heard me beat that drumbeat for 3 years talking about the fact that we cannot continue to release violent predators onto the streets and expect for bad things not to happen. We had a facility in Newcastle, Indiana that was literally half full, and the objection from those in charge of prioritizing how your tax dollars are spent was that it was too far away. Ladies and gentlemen, it was 19 miles away. And what have we seen now? 2 months later, prisoners from California are being transported to our state 3,000 miles away. And so we do need to work in a bipartisan way, but we also need to continue to be vigilant and hold those that prioritize how tax dollars are spent accountable. I want to touch on one thing my opponent said during her opening statement about this elderly lady on the east side. It concerns me greatly that anyone would feel unsafe walking the streets. And you've heard me say for years, what good is prosperity if you don't feel safe walking down the street at night? But if people feel unsafe, it's because the administration has failed to prioritize public safety. There's been a 25% reduction in community policing. Police officers have been threatened to lose their jobs. Morale is low within the police department. They are still working without a contract.
Okay, Melina, you've got 1 minute for a rebuttal.
Again, the Office of Prosecutor in this city requires leadership. And to the point, for example, on major initiatives like consolidation of law enforcement, I know that the first time around, the mayor's office would have appreciated an opinion from the prosecutor's office, either for or against it. The way we make progress in this community is to embrace tough decisions and to lead. And in that case, we needed leadership from everybody.
Okay, thank you. In previous discussions, you both have expressed concern about gun-related crimes. Most of the murders in our community are the result of guns. Would you use the power and influence of the prosecutor's office to push for a law prohibiting or greatly limiting the sale of guns in Marion County? And please explain why or why not. Carl?
Before I answer that question, let me just say that as far as the issue of consolidation goes, I did offer my opinion. My opinion is that if consolidation is something that we think is necessary, then I think the mayor ought to be the one responsible, because ultimately, when something bad happens, if, God forbid, we have a terrorist attack in our city, people are going to look to the mayor of this city for leadership, and that the mayor should not abdicate that responsibility. As to the issue of guns, I am a firm believer in the Second Amendment. I believe that law-abiding citizens absolutely have the right to own, carry, possess firearms, and the role of the prosecutor is to drive a wedge between those that would use guns to hurt and those that would possess these guns illegally. I think that we have a real issue in our state with straw purchasers. There are individuals that are able to go into gun stores, buy guns, rightfully, after background checks are done, hold them for literally minutes, and then they can go out, give, transfer, sell these guns without any sort of background checks on the person that they're purchasing. And so you get stories like we had in the Chicago paper about Indiana sort of being a mecca for these people to come in and buy firearms. And the gun stores, the gun owners are conducting the proper background checks. It's these secondary transfers that are really causing the issues, because a gun is used in a violent crime. It's tracked down, but it's tracked down to the person who originally bought it from the gun store, and there is no responsibility on the part of the person who transferred that firearm to transfer it to somebody who has a legal right to own it.
Okay. Melina?
I would agree that the loophole for purchasing at gun shows is an issue that we should address, and I think the comments that my opponent made are very well spoken in that regard. That is a very big concern as it relates to straw purchases. I also believe when it comes to gun violence, which of course we all know we have got to attack as it's been up in our community over the last few years, is a bigger picture. Guns aren't the only issue. I think we've got to tie together gun violence, gang violence, and drugs. And we need to make sure that we're attacking all three of those with the same vigor to make sure that we make a difference in getting guns out of the hands of criminals. We also need to make sure that we're aggressively using our prosecutorial tools, including but not limited to the enhancements that are available to prosecutors when certain crimes are committed with guns. And so we need to have a holistic approach to address this issue. But the last point I would make is something I've been talking about for some time, which is in the 21st century, I think in this size city, we need to act like we're in the 21st century, and we need to embrace new tools and new technology. And one of the things I've been talking about for over a year is embracing a new technology that would help get guns out of the hands of dangerous criminals, using high-tech audio sensors called gunshot detection technology to literally help law enforcement be notified immediately where gunfire comes from, pinpoint the precise location, the speed, the direction, the number of bullets, and bring law enforcement to the scene more quickly, hopefully to get those suspects and get the guns out of the hands of very dangerous criminals who are terrorizing our neighborhood. So I think we need to make sure and recognize in closing that this is a bigger issue that requires a multi-pronged attack on this issue.
Carl, 1 minute.
Thank you, Dennis. With all due respect, I would have to disagree with my opponent as to this issue of this gunshot detection technology. Literally, the police arrive on the scene within seconds, if not minutes, after these gunshots are called in. And unless a giant cage is going to fall out of the sky and trap them where those shots are fired, then it is really not a good use of taxpayer money. If we want to talk about spending money, we ought to make sure that the police have a contract, that they are able to have the resources they need to do their job, that the men and women in blue and brown are adequately equipped, that they have a contract, and that we do everything we can to make sure that their morale is high. Because I can tell you, if their morale is not high, then law enforcement suffers. And we as a community really ought to put public safety first. We found money for everything else, including a $150 million library project that is $50 million over budget. But we still don't have money to put public safety first.
Thank you. We'll now turn to the campaign. Carl, a big focus of your campaign is what has been what you believe is the inexperience of Molina. And Molina, you've made much of Carl's prosecution record in his office. Why have each of you chosen to go negative in this campaign instead of focusing solely on the positive contributions you would make to this office? Molina, you'll go first.
From the beginning of the campaign, I have focused on what I would bring to the table as elected prosecutor. I've spent proudly the last 12 months visiting with neighborhood associations, getting out in the community, sharing my views on how I can materially make a difference in this community out of the prosecutor's office, but also hearing from the community about what concerns they have. So that's been what I've been focusing on. But just like in any business, any CEO has got to make sure and address their board of directors. In this case, the board of directors is indeed the public. And performance and records are an issue. And so there's no question that taking a look at how we're doing now versus how we've done over the past is a material fact in this campaign. And so I have made an issue of the fact that the conviction rates are well down. I think that's something to be concerned about. Because again, while those are numbers that represent real peoples, real people, real criminals who end up back on your street, real victims who don't get served justice. So I believe that's an important issue, and I'll continue to talk about it.
Carl?
Thank you. We talk about conviction rates. The Indianapolis Star stated in the paper on Sunday that my opponent has mischaracterized the conviction rates of the office, taking into account the fact that open cases, meaning cases that have not been resolved, are counted as losses. Now, that's the kind of fuzzy math that really does confuse the issue when we're talking about domestic violence, and I think it is a bit shameful because it may have a chilling effect on victims of domestic violence actually coming forward and helping to break that cycle of violence. It also doesn't take into account situations where somebody was convicted of a much higher offense. The case of Stephen Jones comes to mind. Here's an individual who was charged with domestic battery as a misdemeanor and also attempted murder. He was found guilty on the attempted murder, sent to prison for 30 years, and under my opponent's analysis, that's counted as a loss. So when we talk about conviction rights, I think we need to be real careful that we're talking about the right kind of math. Additionally, being prosecutor is so much more than just sitting behind a desk and reviewing cases. It's about rolling up your sleeves and leading by example. I've heard the analogy about being the CEO of an airline many times, and whether or not the CEO of an airline is a pilot, certainly the CEO of an airline would know the intricacies of what the airline business is, just as the prosecutor has to know the intricacies of the prosecutor's office. If you take the prosecutor's office out of this equation, think about it in terms of this. Think about another law enforcement agency. Think about the chief of police. Now, does the chief of police go out and actually make arrests every single day? No. Can he? Absolutely. Do you want a chief of police that's never made an arrest? Do you want a chief of police that's never put a bad guy in jail? What you've heard me talk about in this campaign is my opponent's experience, the fact that she's never filed a charge, never prosecuted a case, never put a criminal in jail. I think it's relevant.
Molina, 1 minute.
Again, let's just talk about the numbers, and again, going back to the Star. What the Star told us is that only 57% of felons are convicted under this prosecutor. That's an 8% drop from the prior administration. Another fact, when it comes to domestic violence, I did an apples-to-apples comparison of convictions for domestic battery. And the convictions for domestic battery under the current prosecutor is 9%. An apples-to-apples comparison, also not taking into account higher charges, so the same benefit or detriment, however you want to look at it, was given to the prior prosecutor. The apples-to-apples comparison was the prior prosecutor, Scott Newman, had a 37% conviction rate. My concern is when you see a 30% drop, something is wrong, and you have to accept that, and you need to recognize it so that you can make change going forward. You can't hide from those facts.
Okay, thank you. A brief reminder for our WFYI radio listeners. This is a Rotary Club of Indianapolis debate involving the two candidates for Marion County Prosecuting Attorney, former Indianapolis Deputy Mayor Melina Kennedy, and incumbent prosecutor Carl Brizzi. On the issue of public safety, Susan Brooks, the U.S. attorney here, has said that 4,200 inmates completed their sentences last year and returned to Marion County. What can be done to ensure that these people do not again commit crimes? Carl?
Thank you, Dennis. The subject of reintegration, reintegrating prisoners back into society, is an issue that is critical to public safety. That's the Marion County number. The statewide number is over 16,000. The national number is 650,000 prisoners released back into society every single year. And we, as a community, as a law enforcement community, really need to do everything we can do to equip these individuals with the right kinds of tools so that they can succeed. Now, let's make sure we differentiate, because one of the things I'm going to the legislature with this session is making sure that we have some sort of truth in sentencing in this state. Right now, inmates can literally get out in about 40%, only doing 40% of their time. So if you get a 10-year sentence, you can be out in four with good time and with some of the educational incentives that they have. Now, that's fine for a certain type of offender. But there are some offenders, like habitual criminals, gang members, violent criminals, those that prey on seniors and children, that ought not get the benefit of a 50% reduction in their sentence. They ought to do an 85%, at least 85% of their sentence, so that there is some truth in sentencing, so that the sentence that they actually receive is closer to the sentence they actually serve. But there are still so many others that do deserve some sort of treatment, whether it's rehabilitative treatment, when they're released from prison, vocational, and not just getting, you know, a bachelor's degree for the sake of a bachelor's degree. I'm talking about, you know, culinary skills, welding, some kind of tools where they can actually go out into society and actually make a living and be productive. And that means that when they leave the prisons, that they need to have ID. I was just at a prison facility that literally has not only an Ivy Tech vocational component, but also a BMV branch. It might be easier for those folks to get licenses than it is you all. I don't know. But at least when they leave, they have valid identification so they can actually open up a checking account.
Okay, Melina?
For truth in sentencing to apply, you need to have a conviction first, and I think that's a point worth making. But back to the question that you asked, Dennis, I really want to suggest that we consider what can be done, and there are many things that can be done. First, I want to applaud the state for the Plainfield Reentry Facility. I think that's a terrific idea, and I applaud the governor and the state for stepping forward on that. Second, we can do things at the local level as well, including at the jail. I'm very proud of the work that I've done with Sheriff Anderson to help open a new facility and move women, female inmates, from the local jail to this facility so that they can have access to certain skills and tools that they need. What we've found is that women who are incarcerated, their children are 6 times more likely to be incarcerated as well. So we have an obligation to try to step in and provide access to parenting skills and other tools that'll help make sure when they get out, they can continue to live productive lives. Finally, talking about things that we have done and can do, I'm proud of the work that the city of Indianapolis is doing, not talking about, but actually doing. It's terrific work, helping lead the effort to find jobs within the city government for those coming out of the system, as well as working with the business community to make sure that the business community understands that this is your problem too. And it's not a problem. It's something that we should look to as an opportunity to bring people back into our community and help them find jobs so that they stay out of the criminal justice system, which is a benefit for all of us.
Carl, you have 1 minute.
Thank you. My opponent has had no experience in job creation when she started working over with the city. And under her leadership, we experienced a 68% increase in unemployment. We lost jobs in Indianapolis, while other cities like Carmel and Fishers, their jobs grew. 50,000 more people went on welfare. And this is important because this makes the job of public safety that much harder. You all know there is a direct link between unemployment and conditions in the city and the increase in crime.
Okay, thank you. The topic of experience comes up again and again. And Carl, I'm told that Stephen Goldsmith had no experience as a prosecutor before he was elected to the position. Was he not qualified for the job? And don't smart managers hire people smarter than themselves, particularly in specialty areas like homicide trials? And Melina, all other things being equal, why would experience in the office not be a deciding factor for voters on November 7th? Melina, you may go first.
Starting with just understanding the prosecutor's office in this size city, it's a major enterprise, an enterprise charged to make our community safer by prosecuting cases, preventing crime, and doing other things to make our community safe. The office has 168 lawyers on staff, 350 people on staff, and a budget of nearly $15 million. It's a leadership position. My experience as deputy mayor, my experience as a lawyer for over 10 years, makes me the right person to lead that job. And I got to tell you, I'm proud of my efforts as deputy mayor. I'm proud of my efforts in economic development. The Bureau of Labor Statistics shows that jobs grew under my tenure, and frankly, those were pretty tough times. But what I have that others haven't had in this experience is I've worked at the Indiana Supreme Court, where I every single day reviewed trials on behalf of a judge for the Indiana Supreme Court, and I got to see firsthand every day what went wrong at a trial for the prosecutor, what went right. And what I know firsthand from that experience is that literally a paperwork error can result in a criminal being back in your streets. But I've also been a deputy mayor. I've led major efforts to success. I've been a trained lawyer for over 10 years. I've worked with victims of domestic violence, both as a lawyer as well as an advocate. And I believe what we need in this community and what we need in this office is a change, new leadership, and new direction. And just like in any business where you have a turnaround situation, it's common to bring someone in with a fresh perspective, a new idea, and a new attack plan to turn things around and go in the right direction. And with the numbers that we've seen, and the continued decline in conviction rate, I believe we need a change. We need new leadership and someone to come in and lead the effort to success.
Thank you, Carl.
Thank you. When Steve Goldsmith was elected, I was 8 years old. So I really don't know what the condition of the city was then or the prosecutor's office, but I do know now that we are dealing with some major issues with our city. And to be fair to the citizens of this county, you want a prosecutor who's tried murder cases, who's tried attempted murder cases, who's tried the battery cases, who's gone after gang members, who's gone after violent felons, that's done white-collar crime, public corruption cases. I've actually tried bribery, forgery. And that gives me the experience to lead an office of 168 trial attorneys who roll up their sleeves every single day and do the very best they can. Are mistakes made? Sure, mistakes are made. We file 45,000 cases a year. That's 180,000 cases over the last 4 years that I've been prosecutor. But the biggest mistake is to think that somebody who's never done the job, someone who's never prosecuted a case, someone who's never put a criminal in jail can do better. You know, we talk about experience as a clerk for the Supreme Court. I must say, with all respect, that reviewing cases as a clerk is not the same as prosecuting cases. It's much, much different. And the we talk about leadership and leading the office, not only trial attorneys, but also stepping up under some very difficult times. Our budget's been cut for the last 3 years, 03, 04, and 05, to the tune of several million dollars. We've lost lawyers. But what we did, despite all of that, is roll up our sleeves and get in and be advocates for the people. And, you know, I have to say, you know, you take this experience issue about, you know, reviewing cases and that sort of thing, and just because you read a book about carpentry, y'all don't want me building your house, trust me.
Melina, 1 minute.
Again, it comes down to leadership, and leadership requires making tough decisions, building teams, and leading them to success, and that's the experience I have as a deputy mayor. The experience I have as a lawyer advocating for clients, and the experience I have at the highest court in the state, understanding firsthand what can go wrong and what can go right to make sure we do keep dangerous criminals off our streets. Carl, you've tried 2 cases over the last 4 years, and I think that alone, of the hundreds of thousands of cases that have gone before your office, just shows that this job is about leadership, management, and building teams. And that's what I can do, and I've shown that I can do that successfully over and over again. And finally, I'd point out, I thought Steve Goldsmith had a very good quote in the paper just this weekend when he talked about how his job and his top priority was to surround himself with the best prosecutors. That's what I would do as the elected prosecutors, make sure every day that I have the best most talented deputy prosecutors, and I respect the talent and the sincerity of the current deputy prosecutors, but I'd like to build upon the leadership in that office and build that team to success so that we don't have conviction rates that are significantly lower than they have been over the past.
Okay, time's up. Carl, your closing statement.
Just rebuttal?
Or I'm sorry. No, this is the... Pardon?
I think I did a rebuttal.
Sorry. You did a rebuttal. Yeah. Okay, you're right. That's what you were doing. You got me. I told you these were articulate, sharp people. Okay, now we'll go to the 2.5-minute closing statements. And Melina, you will go first.
Over the last 4 years, as we've said, Marion County has witnessed a dramatic rise in crime. And I know that you've heard many times from my opponent whether or not you can trust me to protect your families. And I hope being here today, you've learned from me that I can and I will, and that I have a plan to attack this rise in crime. But I want to leave with you tonight one question that I believe you should take with you into the voting booth, and that is this. Over the last 4 years, do you feel safer? Are you okay with the fact that our conviction rates are substantially down from what they have been in prior administrations? That we are seeing more criminals out on the streets because they weren't put away in the first place. And if you're okay with that, then I respectfully disagree. But if you're not, and if you think we can do better, then understand that I have a plan of attack that will make our community safer, a plan that looks the gang leaders, the drug dealers in the eye and says your days are numbered, because we will not tolerate this kind of terror in our communities anymore. And I ask for you to consider going into the voting booth on November 7th, whether you feel safer and whether you think it's time for a change. And I hope for your support if you think you agree. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, Carl, your closing statement.
Thank you, sir. First of all, let me say that I have got the most talented, the greatest, most sincere group of prosecutors that a prosecutor could ever have the honor of working with. And ladies and gentlemen of the prosecutor's office, thank you. Thank you so much for the hard work, the dedication, and the passion that you bring to the office every single day. The question is, do you feel safer? I don't think that we would have to ask that question if those in charge of economic development, if those in charge of job creation, if those in charge of prioritizing how your tax dollars are spent would put public safety first. Good grief. What good is a new dome and a convention center and a $150 million library project if the police don't have a contract, if the prosecutor's office gets cut and that money goes to those who defend criminals? Public safety has to be the priority, and we have to be vigilant. And I can tell you, and you know this because I've been at the forefront of this issue, we talk about jail overcrowding. Why were thousands of criminals released back onto the streets when we had the space and the money to make it happen, to put those people behind bars? Those in charge of prioritizing your tax dollars didn't do what they were supposed to do. They failed in public safety. And now to turn around and blame the prosecutor's office, I would have to say, is a bit disingenuous. My opponent talks about her plan of attack to attack crime. One of the components on page 15 of that plan is to give amnesty to gang members. Amnesty to gun-toting gang members who have committed felonies. I can tell you, as the former chief of gang prosecutions, this is a terrible idea. We have spent literally, under Scott Newman and myself, the last 12 years, literally making Indiana as inhospitable to these gangs as we possibly can, doubling the sentence, coming down hard on them. And now to throw out the welcome mat and say that amnesty for gang members is what we ought to be advocating is a terrible idea. I can tell you this, that I go to bed every night and I wake with the same thought, which is how to make this county safer. And some of the things that I may be proposing may be unpopular. Some of the things that we may do are aggressive in terms of our enforcement. And you talk about conviction rates. You want a prosecutor who's not afraid to take the tough cases to trial. You want a prosecutor who's not afraid of political attacks about stats, someone who's not timid, somebody who is aggressive, going after the worst of the worst.
Carl, thank you very much. Melina, thank you. It's a wonderful debate, and you know what? The discussion isn't over. The campaign still has a couple of weeks. You'll be hearing a lot more. I'd also like to thank our timekeepers, Denny and Julian, for their great job keeping things in order. To our WFYI radio audience, thank you for listening. And to you Rotarians, thank you so much for making this event happen.